Hello there and welcome. Today is Tuesday, January 17th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Americans celebrate the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday with service and reflection.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed.
Washington preparing also for Friday's presidential inauguration. And the last man to walk on the moon has died.
When you leave Earth orbit and look back, you begin to realize you're seeing Earth for the first time.
It's all on today's International Edition. Monday, the United States honored the memory of slain civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. He was killed in Memphis in 1968. In early 1995, VOA's Sarah Williams interviewed King's widow, Coretta Scott King, in the U.S. Capitol. She said the holiday was designed as a day of service.
And we say not only on the holiday, but throughout the year, help somebody. And Martin Luther King Jr. gave us a very stirring message 2 months before his assassination, where he talked about the meaning of greatness, and he talked about to be great was to serve. And he said, everybody can be great because anybody can serve. And so we're saying to people, not only work to improve race relations, but work to improve the conditions of people's lives. And everybody can work at that on this particular day. So they begin to see it not as a day of rest, a day off from work, but it is a day of service.
He had such an enormous impact on this country, but he also had enormous impact on other countries. What do you think is perhaps some of the most important things about his life, would you say, particularly for people in other countries?
Well, his message was a universal message of justice and freedom and peace and human dignity. He also was concerned about the fact that there were so many people who were in poverty. So he worked to sensitize the nation and government as well as the private sector to the needs of everyone to have a job or an income. And when I was at the United Nations as a public delegate in 1977, many of the people I met from countries that I'd never even heard of would say to me, Dr. King did not just work for the freedom and for the dignity of black people, but even in our country. And they were not people of color many times. And it was a very moving situation to hear how people from all parts of the world felt a kinship and an identification with the struggles that Martin Luther King Jr. waged. The I Have a Dream speech, which was heard around the world at the time he gave it, and since has been repeated by television or radio, especially around the holiday and around April 4th, was a universal appeal to the highest and noblest in terms of what humankind can achieve.
Well, Donald Trump met with the civil rights leader's son on Monday. He was later asked about the ongoing war of words between the president-elect and civil rights hero, Representative John Lewis.
I am, as John Lewis and many others are, a bridge builder. The goal is to bring America together and Americans. We are a great nation, but we must become a greater nation.
Well, for analysis now, we are joined by Indiana University professor Kevin Brown, and he's also the author of Race, Law, and Education in the Post-Desegregation Era. If Martin Luther King Jr. were alive today, sir, what do you think he'd say or advise Donald Trump?
You certainly say that, look, you know, you should be working for coalitions, bringing in the included, not excluding people, that this needs to be a country that's about care and concern for everyone. And not just care and concern for the wealthy who, in theory, their tide will lift all boats, but that, no, it's better to deal with those who are struggling at the bottom than helping those at the top.
Do you think that racism is alive and well and growing?
I don't want to say it's growing. There are counter trends that are, in my mind, very positive. You know, we're seeing more and more interracial dating, interracial couples. We certainly see black people in very high positions these days. But there's still this real reservoir of problems more at the bottom end. The problem with the criminal justice system, the problem of biased policing, unemployment and poverty, and the problem with poor urban inner city schools. So it's almost as if you're looking at society getting better for blacks, particularly at the upper end, while getting worse for those at the bottom end.
There was a war of words over the weekend between civil rights icon and Martin Luther King associate Representative John Lewis, who said that he didn't believe that he was legitimately elected, so he wouldn't be attending the inauguration. Donald Trump took to Twitter to really lash out at John Lewis, saying things about his inaction.
Right.
What is your response to that?
Well, I probably wouldn't agree with Representative Lewis in critiquing the election of Donald Trump as illegitimate. I certainly think the notion of criticizing John Lewis for talk, no action, and saying that he needs to be focusing in on his constituency is certainly unjustified. You know, the thing that Donald Trump has to do, it seems to me more than just about any president that we've seen, if he really needs to engage in a conscious, concerted effort to bring Americans together. I have a tremendous fear that the kind of rhetoric that Donald Trump continues to use and the attacks he continues to make are going to further divide this country at a very critical moment. So while I would probably not have wanted John Lewis to use the terms illegitimate with respect to Donald Trump's election, I would certainly hope that our president would be able to rise above people who criticize him and take it upon himself as a mission to unite the country.
Do you feel that it was a good step for Donald Trump to meet on Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday with his son?
Certainly. I certainly think it was a very good move for the president-elect to meet with the son of Martin Luther King Jr. on this day in particular.
Do you have any favorite Martin Luther King Jr. quotes?
I love the I Have a Dream speech. So most times when I'm talking, I'm quoting passages from that. I love that justice rolling down like a great river.
Indiana University professor Kevin Brown, thanks for being with us. Turning now to social media, the holiday apparently a big trending topic. Joining us for that part of the story, G. Abby Lee. Hey, G.
Hi, Lori. If you write hashtag MLK Day on Twitter, it creates a hash flag of a torch. I've explained it before, but a hash flag is an image that appears after a hashtag and enabled for specific occasions or events. Some call it custom Twitter emojis.
Yeah, that would be a good description. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about some of the notable tweets you're seeing.
Sure. So Representative John Lewis, who is also a civil rights activist, used the hashtag and wrote, "We honor Dr. King's legacy through service to our community and adherence to the philosophy and discipline of nonviolence." Speaking of service, President Barack Obama is one of the many people who are honoring the day by volunteering. He tweeted, "In honor of their legacy," referring to Dr. King and those who marched with him, "the First Lady and I are joining Americans across the country in a day of service to our community here in D.C.
And did Donald Trump also tweet about the day?
Absolutely, although he didn't say how he is spending it. He asked people to honor Dr. King for the great man he was. And the top comment to that tweet is by the weekend editor of British paper The Guardian. He replied, "One of your staffers got your phone again?" As a joke.
Anything else trending we should hear about?
Yeah, so we have time for just one more story. Next up is something that literally woke me up last night. Americans across the country are following the NFL or the National Football League, and when they watch the games, they're not exactly quiet.
We know.
I'm a grandma and I go to sleep at like 10. The trending story this weekend was comedian and Dallas Cowboys superfan Jordan Garnett's tattoo. Two months before the playoffs, he prematurely got a tattoo declaring his team as a Super Bowl champion.
Wow.
And they lost.
Oh, ouch.
People are tweeting, "If you're sad about the Cowboys losing, then think about how bad the guy who got the Super Bowl tattoo feels," referring to him. Back to you, Lori.
I'd say I'd be pretty upset getting a tattoo and then they lost. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G Abby Lee. Here are some of the stories we're following at VOANews.com. The FBI arrests the wife of the Orlando nightclub shooter. The suspect in the New Year's Turkish nightclub massacre is reportedly in custody. Donald Trump picking a fight with the U.S. intelligence community. A new fight as John Kerry bids farewell. Britain's leaders look ahead. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at VOANews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Donald Trump will become the 45th president of the United States on January 20th when he'll take the oath of office on the steps of the Capitol, with millions watching on television around the world. Historically, U.S. presidential inaugurations have symbolized the peaceful transfer of power and often reflect political change, as we hear from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone in Washington.
I, Dwight D. Eisenhower, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States
and will, to the best of my ability,
preserve, protect, and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
It is a ritual of American democracy as old as the Republic. The inauguration of a new president marks the end of one era and the beginning of another, both in good times and in bad. In 1933, Franklin Roosevelt took the oath of office in the midst of the Great Depression.
Let me assert my firm belief. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
In 1961, John Kennedy inspired a new generation of Americans with a call to service.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
20 years later, Republican Ronald Reagan came to power, promising to rein in the size of government.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Following his victory in November, President-elect Donald Trump went on a victory tour and vowed to deliver on his campaign promises.
This is truly an exciting time to be alive. The script is not yet written. We do not know what the page will read tomorrow. But for the first time in a long time, what we do know is that the pages will be authored by each and every one of you. It's a movement.
The country remains divided in the wake of Trump's victory, and one of the new president's first challenges will be forging unity, says analyst John Fortier.
No, I think it's a very important opportunity for the first step to really speak to the country, to say now as president, perhaps some of the differences we have on the campaign trail are behind us.
Historically, presidential inaugurations have become moments when the heat of the political campaign is set aside in a spirit of continuity and democracy, says John Hudak.
President Obama will ride in a car with President-elect Trump to the U.S. Capitol from the White House and peacefully hand over power and watch his successor, not the successor he wanted, but his successor nonetheless, take the oath of office. That doesn't happen everywhere in the world, and it's an important display in this country.
Trump is known for his off-the-cuff speaking style at his rallies, but what about his inaugural address? It's unpredictable, says analyst Norm Ornstein.
An inaugural address is generally crafted and written in advance, and presidents read their inaugural addresses. Will Donald Trump throw out the script and go off on his own? We're in uncharted territory here.
Donald Trump is about to become the 45th president, and the tone he sets at the beginning of his tenure will likely provide clues as to the type of leader he aspires to be. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And VOA has learned that at least 34 Democratic members of Congress say they plan to boycott Friday's inauguration. European nation union nations are bracing for the Trump presidency. They showed defiance Monday in the face of the president-elect's stinging comments on everything from NATO and German cars to the crumbling of the EU itself. In an interview published Monday with German Daily Bild and the Times of London, Trump also expressed his view that NATO was obsolete and European allied members aren't paying their fair share. He also criticized German Chancellor Angela Merkel's migrant policies. Joining me now to talk more about this, Paris-based reporter Catherine Field. Catherine, what's the reaction in Europe like to Trump's comments?
The comment that NATO is obsolete really left people here just astounded. It came out of nowhere with a comment that people, whether it be politicians, diplomats, or just a man in the street in Europe, just did not expect. The reason it wasn't expected is that Donald Trump is the first incoming American president since World War II not to either support or even to understand the concept of Europe, to understand that NATO is important to Europe. This is what ties Europe and what ties America, and it's what underpins the security, that the Americans really are the linchpin for the security that Europe has had since 1945. So that was a real thud, and even the head of NATO about lunchtime, which was a full 12 hours after the remarks came into the press here in Europe, the head of NATO was still wandering around just slightly dazed by it, not really believing that the key partner in this alliance was saying that. Criticizing German Chancellor Merkel, that was seen as a low blow. Criticizing her policies towards letting in the migrants, that was considered really out of place here in Europe. To criticize such a key ally over the policy, which was a problem for the whole of Europe at that time, that was considered to be the wrong thing to do. German elections are coming up. The Chancellor herself is facing elections later this year. These are critical times in Europe, and it's considered that not only do you not criticize your key ally so much in public, but really that even if you are going to delicately say your ally perhaps made a mistake, you do not do it so close to such an important election.
What's the reaction from the general public there? Are they following the U.S. presidential inauguration pretty closely? And what have you been hearing?
It's wall-to-wall coverage by European standards of what's happening. Certainly all the major television networks across Europe will be covering the inauguration live. That having been said, there are already plans in major European capitals on Saturday afternoon for anti-Trump rallies. So it has been followed here. Europeans have a very close link with America. It's always been that World War II would have ended the right way, but it would have taken a lot longer if the Americans hadn't come and helped out Europe so early on in the game. Plus, don't forget that things like the European Union are, again, you know, this is the basis of peace and prosperity in Europe. So when you have President-elect Trump saying that, well, you know, the European Union is going to break up, it's absolutely not true. It has really galvanized people because people do believe that part of the European Union means that, you know, one of the reasons is it will be stronger as a unit. And it was also the deal, if you like, was that America would be able to talk to one partner in Europe. It would be a unified market for American businesses. And this was two big blocks walking hand in hand towards more prosperity. So something like that has been criticized by the president-elect of what is meant to be an allied country, a friend, has been a bit unnerving for people here. And there certainly is a lot of concern that the old guard, which is pretty much seen as Washington, Berlin, London, and Paris, is going to keep everyone safe. There are big question marks over it now.
All right. Paris-based journalist Catherine Field, we appreciate your time. Thanks so much. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news At the top of each hour, around the clock, on the Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues now. Well, U.S. space agency NASA says former U.S. astronaut Gene Cernan, the last man to walk on the surface of the moon, died on Monday at the age of 82. Here's how he once described the experience.
When you leave Earth orbit and look back, you begin to realize you're seeing the Earth for the first time. There's two space programs, both technologically and philosophically, spiritually, whatever. One is in Earth orbit. High-altitude airplane, 200, 250 miles. You fly around the Earth once every hour and a half. Fly through sunrises and sunsets every traverse around the Earth. Horizon is slightly curved. But when you go to the moon and you watch the Earth evolve in front of you, you see something very strange and it's something very familiar. You're not flying around the Earth anymore. You're not flying through sunrises and sunsets without even rolling your eyeballs. You're looking across oceans and continents. You're looking to watch the sunrise on one side of the world and set on the other side all at the same instant. You're looking at a blackness beyond your conception that envelops the Earth, the infinity of time, the infinity of space, the endlessness of it all. I'm not sure what it is, but I know it exists because I saw it with my own eyes.
Well, Cernan was a Navy captain with NASA when they chose him and 13 other astronauts for the pioneering Apollo program, the result of President JFK's 1961 speech in which he announced the goal of landing a man on the moon. Well, cold winter days and nights here in the U.S. are always good times to head to the movies, and there are several new releases in theaters this week. Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard joins us now with reviews, beginning with a good old-fashioned gangster movie starring Ben Affleck.
We do, and right now his brother Casey is stealing the spotlight this year with Manchester by the Sea winning every major award for acting. He's on his way to an Oscar, I'm sure. But Ben made this movie. He directed this film, Live by Night, it's set in the Roaring Twenties and Prohibition, and he's the son of a Boston police superintendent that he moves into a life of crime, and he moves to Florida. Remember the term, the real McCoy? Because they were rum runners down there. So he's a very powerful mob boss, trying to, make a buck by selling rum. Ben Affleck directed this too. It's kind of a messy, unfocused movie. It looks fantastic, but it just never sparks. It never takes off.
Hmm.
It just feels like the bones of a really good movie. So everything's in place to be a fantastic film, but it just doesn't catch fire. It's not a horrible film, but you're just like waiting for the movie to take off. And unfortunately, it's been sitting on the shelf for a couple of years, and now they just kind of threw it out into theaters. But if you want to see Ben Affleck, just be a true movie star, it's called Live by Night.
Well, sounds like a little bit disappointing. But then we've got Monster Trucks. That sounds like not a chick flick.
It's not. It's from Nickelodeon Films and from Paramount Pictures. We have a family film.
Okay.
And, of course. So it's about this teenager in high school who designs monster trucks, for racing and off-road stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And a monster shows up that's been living in the oil fields of North Dakota. And, of course, the government's after this creature. It's almost like an E.T. meets monster trucks, like a demolition derby. So this creature can control his car, control the speed. They bond just like Elliot did with E.T., and it's about trying to get him back home to his own kind. So it's got action. It's got, laughs. It's got everything every kid will love. And with Nickelodeon's stamp on it, it's just family fun all around.
And for those people that just love going to the movies and getting scared, we've got Bye Bye Man.
Well, in January and February, we always have horror films now. And this is the Bye Bye Man. It is rated PG-13, which I'm kind of surprised because it's got terror, horror, violence, bloody images, you know, really kind of crazy stuff. And this, we have a whole new, you know, villain in the horror lexicon, the Bye-Bye Man, who shows up if you say his name. So the tag for the movie is Don't Think It, Don't Say It. It's almost like Bloody Mary or, you know, Candyman. Unfortunately, you know, it's really bad.
Really?
The first hour of the movie, it sets everything up, but we don't know the origins of the Bye-Bye Man. We don't know why he's there doing it. The movie doesn't have any structure. It doesn't have any comprehension whatsoever. And in fact, the last 30 minutes of this movie, the audience I was with was laughing. So that's not a good sign in a horror film.
No.
When you're seeing, so Bye Bye Man is one of the worst films of the year, and it's only a few weeks into 2017. Skip it.
Jeffrey K. Howard, you can find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com. You've been listening to International Edition here on VOA, and that does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Charles Hall. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On the third Monday of each January, Americans honor the memory of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Dr. King, a Baptist minister from the southern state of Alabama, was a leader in the U.S. civil rights movement, advocating social change through nonviolent means. On January 15th, he would have celebrated his 88th birthday. Believing that change does not roll in on the wheels of inevitability, but comes through continuous struggle, Dr. King organized and participated in mass action boycotts, sit-ins, peaceful marches, and other nonviolent acts of civil disobedience. Dr. King once stated that an individual who breaks a law that conscience tells him is unjust and who willingly accepts the penalty of imprisonment in order to arouse the conscience of the community over its injustice is in reality expressing the highest respect for the law. And so activists sometimes deliberately, but peacefully and respectfully, broke laws aimed at segregating the white citizenry from the non-white, thus hoping to bring attention to the inherent unfairness of such legislation. Thus, when a black seamstress named Rosa Parks broke the law in Montgomery, Alabama, by refusing to give up her seat on a bus to a white passenger and subsequently was jailed for her transgression, her plight generated national attention and increasing sympathy for her cause across the country. Dr. King was 39 years old when he died by an assassin's bullet on April 4, 1968, but his legacy lives on. In the fullness of time, segregationist laws were repealed. Discrimination is a legally punishable and punished offense. And even as we celebrate Martin Luther King Jr.'s life and enormous contribution to society, Barack Obama, the first ever African-American U.S. president, is just finishing his second term in office. I never thought in my lifetime that I would see one of us aspiring to the head of our nation, said Martin Luther King Jr.'s eldest sister, Dr. Christine King Ferris. Mr. Obama leading us toward the presidency is like the promised land for us. Dr. King's life is well summed up in his own words. The quality, not the longevity of one's life, is what is important.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. Thank you.
is